Bonjour. J'aimerais commencer par vous remercier de m'avoir invité à vous parler aujourd'hui. C'est un privilège de participer à votre séminaire. Cependant, je regrette que ma connaissance du français soit très mauvaise et je vous prie de m'excuser de devoir vous parler en anglais. I'm sorry. So, we talk a lot about open science and the importance of data reuse, but there's a gap in the data life cycle. And that gap surrounds reusing our data. The element in the chain is frequently missing. And given the years, the money, the expertise, and the energy that we've all spent creating, managing archaeological data archives, this is a problem. Making our data open and accessible doesn't equate to reusing it, nor does making it accessible necessarily make it usable. But if we're not reusing data, how can we justify these resources? Now, of course, saying that there's a lack of data reuse in archaeology is easy. Demonstrating it is perhaps rather less straightforward. But a topic model of 20,000 archaeological journal articles from the 1930s through to the 2010s, created by Ethan Wattrell and Sean Graham, found that no topic used the words reuse, reproducible, or reanalyze in any meaningful way. Where data was referred to, it was always new data. And their conclusion was that whilst archaeologists might revisit an issue from time to time, no one was analyzing someone else's data in any meaningful way. And this observation has also been supported by Isto Huvelo's work, where he talks about a strong tradition within archaeology for conducting research by creating new data rather than reusing old data that's being collected by other people. Looking for evidence of reuse, we can look at data citations. For example, a year or so ago, I looked at the Data Citation Index for data studies that were derived from the UK's Archaeology Data Service, and I found that approximately 60 had apparently been cited elsewhere. But closer examination showed that the publication metadata had actually been incorrectly mapped between the ADS and the Data Citation Index. And so most of the citations weren't actually citing the data, they were citing the site itself. And a more recent study by Ben Marwick and Suzanne Pilar-Birch, looking specifically at the citation of DOIs, found 366 citations of 80 unique data DOIs in the Crossref's events data. But the majority of these appeared, or references appeared on Wikipedia, sorry. And only one was cited in an academic journal article. So at best, it would seem that data reuse in archaeology is happening silently and is poorly cited, if it's cited at all. Or at worst, we're simply not using our data on anything like the scale that we might expect or hope for. So what is going on? Why is there such an apparent lack of data reuse? Sean Graham has suggested that one of the primary reasons why archaeological digital data are not being reused is inadequate levels of data literacy. And he sees this in terms of a lack of a culture of undergraduate teaching using actual archaeological data and an associated fear of failure amongst the students if the digital tools or the data don't work or don't generate the expected outcomes. But what level of data literacy is reasonable? And of course, it's not just about teaching, it's also a question of how data repositories make their data available for reuse. The quality of the associated metadata, paradata, and so on that accompany the data that make it easier to reuse that data. Another possibility may be that we're simply too soon in the cycle. we're still very much in the if we build it, they will come stage of developing our digital data archives. All our energies are invested in creating, developing, and maintaining these resources. Optimistically, they've now reached a tipping point and should be capable of providing the data sets that we want for reuse. And that's spurred on by so-called big data approaches that are beginning to encroach upon archaeological practice. And it's generally agreed that open science requires a culture change, a change which incentivizes open practice, ethically demands it, and so it becomes increasingly the default behavior. And hopefully reuse will follow on from these open practices. Another aspect is perhaps the question of receiving credit for reusing old data within our current university environments. For example, a survey in 2019 of UK research universities by Yimei Zhu found that while 86% of academics considered it important to make their research data available online, only 21% had done so, and only 29% had experience of reusing data from repositories. And she highlighted that sharing our data can actually work against the current academic reward structures. And other barriers that she identified included the time and the effort required to produce the metadata alongside the primary data, and also the uncertainty around the benefits and the usefulness of sharing that data. Ultimately, it can be said that it's easier to demonstrate novelty through creating new data for the first time than using someone else's data. It can seem easier to demonstrate excellence and impact in our research through the discovery of an unknown site or a unique artifact than reusing old data. Of course, much archaeological research involves the collection of new data, much of it development-driven, which extends our knowledge base. But a compulsion for acquiring new data almost seems to be embedded in our archaeological psyche. Archaeology as the unrepeatable experiment, excavation as destruction, and similar analogies are standard archaeological tropes which perhaps affect us more than we might think, surreptitiously coercing us into methods which prioritise primary data collection above secondary reuse. So when we talk about reuse, we often mean different things by that term, and there are very few discussions of reuse to date which really define what they mean by reuse. So there's often a degree of ambiguity in terms of what we mean, and this ambiguity in terminology can lead to confusion and misunderstanding. So when we talk about reuse, do we mean reuse or replication or reproduction or reanalysis or all of the above or something completely different? For example, Christine Borgman and her colleagues in their recent study of the Dutch Dans Institute characterize reuse in terms of foreground use, where data are used employed to create new knowledge, and background use, where data are used as background information or context for a particular research question. And I suspect the latter, background use, is probably more common in archaeology. A paper just published in the Data Science Journal by Stephanie van der Sant and her colleagues points to a lack of a common understanding of what constitutes reuse and differentiates it from related terms. So here, for example, you have reuse that involves the same data and also different questions. And you can see their suggestions as to the sorts of terms that we should be reusing. We should be using for reuse or its allied factors. In fact, this is the complete model that they present. But having shown this, one of the problems is that we can debate what we actually mean by these terms. So, for example, a publication that was just recently come out in America that by the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering and Medicine Replication in the diagram is actually defined by them as reproduction. It's called obtaining consistent computational results using the same input data, computational steps, methods, code, and conditions of analysis. Whilst reproduction in this diagram is actually what they call replication, obtaining consistent results across studies that were aimed at answering the same scientific question, each of which obtained its own data. So arguably, we should flip those, and I suspect, you know, we could actually go through these and we would have some discussion about what we actually mean by these terms and how we apply them. But I think it's a useful start, at least, in terms of narrowing down our definitions. What I'd suggest from an archaeological perspective is that this model underlines that where we address the same research question, most archaeological reuse falls into the replication category, where we're using different data but the same methods. Where we address a different research question altogether, archaeological reuse tends to be split between reinterpretation and what is defined here as reuse. And I would suggest that mostly consists of reuse, where we're taking data from its original context and we're repurposing it for different ends. So where does this leave us in terms of reuse? Well, in their recent reflections on large-scale online research infrastructures, Holly Wright and Julian Richards have recently suggested that we need to understand how to optimize archives and their interfaces. We've heard a little bit about that this morning, so that we can maximize the use and reuse of archaeological data, and also explore how archaeological archives can better respond to user needs alongside ways to document and understand our reuse. But I would suggest that all these kinds of issues, whilst they're not resolved, we're still working on them, are at least known and mostly acknowledged. And I would suggest that the real challenges to data reuse actually lie elsewhere. And these are largely unspoken, unacknowledged, and mostly not well understood. Or to put it another way, the primary challenges for data reuse are not so much related to questions of suitable means of storage and migration of data, or the provision of adequate documentation to facilitate reuse, or issues of trust and credibility of the data, or the appropriate recognition or citation of the data, or even the need for training and reward structures to support reuse, important and critical though these are. Instead, I would suggest that we also need a much deeper understanding and appreciation of what reuse entails. Issues associated with, for example, the representation and the interpretation of old data, the nature and the purpose behind reuse, and the opportunities and the risks presented by reuse. And these questions aren't particular to digital data, but digital data changes the terms of our engagement with their near instant access, volume and flexibility, and their potentially transformative effects on the practice of archaeology now and in the future. So, what are these largely unrecognized challenges that I'm thinking of? Well, I would offer six interrelated suggestions. The first of these is the performativity of archaeological data. It may seem quite self-evident to say that data do not create themselves, but are created by us, or in fact mostly by others, separated from us in space and in time. But there is an ambiguity in our research to data, where it is seen as both given, atomic fragments on the one hand, and made, created or constructed on the other. There's a very long history of seeing our data as givens, distinct, separate from interpretation. And so the way to improve archaeological knowledge is to accumulate more and more data. And from this sort of perspective, data are raw materials, the stuff of archaeology, existing independent of the archaeologist, waiting to be discovered out there. And when it's brought into the light, it's used to create information and build knowledge in the classic data information knowledge wisdom pyramid. On the other hand, we can see data as acts of performative creation, and so not given at all. And instead, based upon our experience, our research objectives, and so on, we articulate our knowledge to recognize, identify, and categorize information. And that information is then atomized within a digital environment to create data. So data in these terms are theory-laden, process-laden, and purpose-laden, and they're not raw in any sense. And that presents a major challenge in terms of reusability. But data have been increasingly perceived as a resource to be mined within big data contexts. So its treatment has arguably gone back to the earlier perception of data as being somehow unprocessed, unworked, typically acquired using rigorous scientific method, and distinct from the subjectivities that generated them and independent of the relations and the context that gave rise to them. How we perceive the origination of data, its creation, should fundamentally affect our subsequent handling and use of it. And I think the challenge, therefore, lies in recognizing this, and I would suggest ensuring that our systems for managing data capture that performativity alongside what might otherwise be seen as the raw data. I'm certainly not the first person to suggest that archaeological data are messy, that they're partial, they're fragmentary, they're incomplete, they incorporate embedded interpretations, inconsistent levels of uncertainty, and variable expert opinion, all mixed together as sets of observations that have been collected across multiple times and numerous places. But it alerts us to the complexity of handling this sort of data, and makes us recognize the risk that data, digital data, can be associated with this aura of truth and objectivity and accuracy. But we're actually starting to see the growing perception that data are relatively straightforward and unproblematic. Any problems of reliability or quality can be overcome by virtue of their quantity. And this is a frequent claim of big data proponents, for example. And certainly intuitively, the bigger your sample size, the better the outcome seems likely to be. But for instance, it's suggested that the combination of the many different biases in our data will approach a random error that we can simply ignore, or that dirty data will have the effect of adding noise to any underlying pattern, which, whilst it makes it harder to detect that pattern in the first place, it does at least have the benefit of making the null hypothesis harder to reject, and so it represents a much more conservative approach. But some studies have also shown that the impact of poor quality data can actually increase rather than reduce as our data set increases. Indeed, Alison Wiley has written about how the archaeological evidence bites back through shadowy data. She talks of it consisting of the notoriously fragmentary and the incomplete nature of the surviving data imprints of past lives. She points to the paucity and instability of the inferential resources that they rely on, which makes data legible only if they conform to the expectations embedded in the scaffolding of pre-understandings that define the subject domain and set the research agenda. So the challenge here is to find a means of capturing those data shadows, to properly record the sets of pre-understandings that structure our data, recognizing that much of our data are recorded over time by different people with different practical and theoretical agendas. And the metadata that we are accustomed to creating and using falls far short in this respect, concentrating as it does largely on discovery rather than reuse. The next step along the data chain from reflecting on the context of the data is the question of its nature. And we often seem to think that data are self-evident, but in reality we're often quite unclear about how the data have been identified and characterized, what actions were taken in their recording, how were they subsequently prepared for deposit within our archives. And there is a lack of transparency all too often about the manipulations that data typically undergo, the methods of data cleansing, data integration, data homogenization are poorly represented making it difficult for people wanting to reuse the data to assess the decisions that were taken in order to address the different recording conventions, the data formats, the data models that we encounter within our data, and to resolve the host of anomalies that exist within the data themselves. Recognizing and recording these kinds of issues represents a major challenge to our current digital practice. And it becomes increasingly significant as we start to amalgamate our data sets together into larger data sets, if not big data, combining data from multiple sources into massified data sets for analytical purposes. And another aspect of this operationalization of the data lies with the very data infrastructures that we are creating and using, because these represent new gatekeepers. And although they've been largely built and driven by digitally knowledgeable archaeologists, we're barely beginning to understand the predispositions of these systems. For example, it's not just the data that are contingent and situated, but the data infrastructures themselves are also situated culturally, socially, politically, technologically, and spatially, and consequently risk the creation of filter bubbles, if you like, which prioritize certain kinds of data retrieval and their use through the design of their research, of their search tools, and the structuring of their data. So an additional challenge for operationalization is greater understanding and appreciation of the tools we're building to provide access to these data. One of the most challenging aspects of archaeological data is its almost infinite flexibility in terms of potential application. Effectively, much archaeological research entails using data as a proxy for something else, for the immaterial processes behind the tangible evidence that we have to hand. Classic examples include using visibility as a spatial proxy for cognition, for example. We use artifact densities as proxies for levels of human activity, material culture traits as proxies for social identity, vessels as proxies for their contents, and so on. And in this way, archaeological data have almost infinite potential applications as we come up with new proxies, new ways of thinking about the same data. But in practice, it's more complicated than this, because the digital data that we seek to reuse can actually constrain and limit subsequent analysis. Our databases are theoretically structured in ways that enable certain perspectives and disable others, not least through determining what is recorded and what is not recorded. Similarly, the databases that we use define the set of procedures available to us, which shape the retrieval and the processing of the data. So the challenge here, therefore, is to recognize that the very tools that are seen as enabling, that facilitate and simplify our reuse of data, whether we're talking about databases at the site or the collection level, for example, or large-scale data repositories, these all in various ways constrain our actions and reduce potential applications. They limit as well as they enable. And this is often overlooked by us in the thrill of access and retrieval. So alongside the unanticipated potential of our data, in other words, are unanticipated constraints on our use of that data, which we need to find ways to overcome that don't entail simply ignoring them. One of the characteristics of our digital era is the increasing insertion of non-human actors in the process of collecting data. Many of our digital devices capture data and are increasingly automated, with less and less need for human intervention. And this changes our relationship with data. For example, Fred Limp suggested a little while ago that when thinking about traditional field survey, we observe first of all, then we interpret, and then we abstract, and then we capture data. Whereas in contrast, in a digital environment, we capture the data first, and then we think about it, abstract it, and interpret it. And so in the process, data subtly changes from something that arises out of our observations and our engagement with the physical features to something that is automatically captured without the need for our engagement. Human intervention becomes limited to, at most, a form of point and shoot. The use of structure from motion photography as a surrogate for traditional field drawing is another instance of this at work, and again it changes the nature of our engagement with the physical remains. The trap, of course, is to assume that just because these sorts of data are created by machine, that they are somehow objective and more reliable than any human equivalent, whereas machine-generated digital data actually obscures the role of human beings in the data creation process. And such problems are only compounded when we use techniques like technical pattern matching or machine-based aggregation. So the challenge with this sort of automated data collection is to ensure that knowledge of the human decisions behind the collection, along with the mixture of human-derived and technical constraints of the instrumentation itself that we're using, are appropriately captured and recorded alongside the data themselves. Back in 2016, I wrote a blog post called Digital Data Realities, which generated a lot of interest, not least because I claimed outright that we weren't using our archived archaeological data. But interestingly, one of the aspects of that post that nobody picked up on was the question of the environmental cost of our emphasis on the need for online immediate access to data, which we weren't actually using in any case. A paper published this year by Keith Prendergast and his colleagues argued that we need, and I quote, a renewed emphasis on critical appraisal, reduce the resource intensity of digital storage and management by rethinking digital permanence, and meet user needs in different ways by challenging assumptions about the availability of digital content and the need for always-on digital access infrastructure. Now, this isn't really something I think that we have addressed as archaeologists, although any archivist amongst us will be all too aware of these sorts of questions. For example, they suggest that not all digital material requires the same levels of preservation, and they question whether everything has to be migrated or digitized at the highest quality possible. Unique, born digital materials may deserve higher levels of preservation effort than digitized copies of stable analog records, for example. We may also consider acceptable levels of loss. For instance, a random bit flip in an uncompressed TIFF graphics file will be far less significant than the same flip in a JPEG file, for example. Do we always need to keep our storage media powered up to ensure immediate access, or can we conceive of different levels of speed of access according to levels of demand, for example? So the challenge here is to incorporate the environmental costs associated with our demands for digital data much more explicitly into our data infrastructures. So let me leave you with six interrelated challenges for data reuse. And these aren't the ones that might be expected. We're not necessarily talking about the need for more data citation, for greater digital literacy, for better interfaces and enhanced access, for example. If you like, these are our known unknowns for digital data reuse. Instead, what I'm arguing for here is the importance of addressing our unknown unknowns, to look deeper at the nature of our data and how that nature is properly represented and captured alongside the data themselves. So I suggest that we need to capture the performativity of our data and its processes of creation, to capture the data shadows and the sets of pre-understandings that are associated with the structuring of that data, to appreciate the predispositions of our data and their repositories, to understand the constraints on our tools and on our data which limit their potential, to capture the human decisions embedded within automated data devices, and to incorporate the environmental costs in the consideration of our digital data. And these challenges will affect our reuse of data, whether we recognize it or not. And because they're not primarily technical issues, they will not be resolved unless we choose to address them explicitly. And the increasingly arm's-length relationship we have with our digital data introduces new challenges for our manipulation, understanding, and recommunication of archaeological information like these, which I think we need to be alert to. Thank you very much.